Welcome back to Sleepy Stories, the podcast designed to help you fall asleep. Tonight's request comes from a listener in Des Moines, Iowa. Yaritza has an interest in mythology, and it just so happens here at our library we have a copy of Homer's The Iliad and also The Odyssey. They're broken up into books, not chapters. So in our selection tonight from The Odyssey, here's book 3. And now it's that time. Let's fall asleep. Telemachus is warmly welcomed by Nestor in Pylos and joins in celebrating the festival of Poseidon. Nestor tells stories of the return of himself and the other heroes from Troy, but knows nothing of the fate of Odysseus. The next day, sacrifices are offered for Telemachus' success. Nestor sends his son, Pisistratus, with Telemachus as he continues his journey to Sparta by land. As the sun was rising from the fair sea into the firmament of heaven to shed light on mortals and immortals, they reached Pylos, the city of Neleus. Now, the people of Pylos were gathered on the seashore to offer sacrifice of black bulls to Poseidon, lord of the earthquake. There were 9 guilds, with 500 men in each, and there were 9 bulls to each guild. As they were eating the inward meats and burning the thigh bones in the name of Poseidon, Telemachus and his crew arrived. They furled their sails, brought their ship to anchor, and went ashore. Athene led the way, and Telemachus followed her. Presently, she said, "Telemachus, you must not be in the least shy or nervous. You have taken this voyage to try and find out where your father is buried and how he came by his end. So go straight up to Nestor, that we may see what he has to tell us. Beg of him to speak the truth, and he will tell no lies, for he is an excellent person." "But how, mentor," replied Telemachus, "dare I go up to Nestor? And how am I to address him? I have never yet been used to holding on long conversations with people, and am ashamed to begin questioning one who is so much older than myself." Athene answered, "Some things, Telemachus, will be suggested to you by your own instinct, and heaven will prompt you further. For I am assured that the gods have been with you from the time of your birth until now." She then went quickly on, and Telemachus followed in her steps, till they reached the place where the guilds of the Pylian people were assembled. There they found Nestor sitting with his sons, while his company round him were busy getting dinner ready and putting pieces of meat onto the spits, while other pieces were cooking. When they saw the strangers, they crowded round them. They took them by the hand and bade them take their places. Nestor's son, Pisistratus, at once offered his hand to each of them, and he seated them on some soft sheepskins that were lying on the sands near his father and his brother. Then he gave them their portions of the inward meats and poured wine for them into a golden cup, handing it first to Athene and saluting her at the same time. "Offer a prayer, sir," said he, "to King Poseidon, for it is his feast that you are joining. When you have duly prayed and made your drink offering, pass the cup to your friend, that he may do so also. I doubt not that he too lifts his hands in prayer. For man cannot live without God in the world. Still, he is younger than you are, and is much of age with myself. So I'll give you the precedence." As he spoke, he handed her the cup. Athene thought it very right and proper of him to have given it to herself first. She accordingly began praying heartily to Poseidon. "O thou," she cried, "that encirclest the earth, vouchsafe to grant the prayers of thy servants that call upon thee, more especially, we pray thee send down thy grace on Nestor and on his sons. Thereafter, also make the rest of the Pylian people some handsome return for the goodly hecatomb they are offering you. Lastly, grant Telemachus and myself a happy issue in respect of the matter that has brought us in our ship to Pylos." When she had thus made an end of praying, she handed the cup to Telemachus, and he prayed likewise. By and by, when the outer meats were roasted and had been taken off the spits, the carvers gave every man his portion, and they all made an excellent dinner. As soon as they had had enough to eat and drink, Nestor, knight of Gerene, began to speak. He said, "Now that our guests have done their dinner, it will be best to ask them who they are." "Who then, Sir Strangers, are you? And from what port have you sailed? Are you traders? Or do you sail the seas as rovers, with your hand against every man, and every man's hand against you?" Telemachus answered boldly, for Athene had given him courage to ask about his father and get himself a good name. He said, "Nestor, son of Neleus, honor to the Achaean name. You ask whence we come, and I will tell you. We come from Ithaca, under Neritum, and the matter about which I would speak is of private, not public import. I seek news of my unhappy father, Odysseus, who is said to have sacked the town of Troy in company with yourself. We know what fate befell each one of the other heroes who fought at Troy. But as regards Odysseus, heaven has hidden from us the knowledge that he is even dead at all. For no one can certify us in what place he perished, nor say whether he fell in battle on the mainland or was lost at sea amid the waves of Amphitrite. Therefore, I am suppliant at your knees, if haply you may be pleased to tell me of his melancholy end, whether you saw it with your own eyes or heard it from some other traveler. For he was a man born to trouble. Do not soften things out of any pity for me, but tell me in all plainness exactly what you saw. If my brave father, Odysseus, ever did you loyal service, either by word or deed, when you Achaeans were harassed among the Trojans, bear it in mind now, as in my favor, and tell me truly all." Nestor answered, "My friend, you recall a time of much sorrow to my mind. For the brave Achaeans suffered much, both at sea while privateering under Achilles, and when fighting before the great city of King Priam. Our best men, all of them, fell there. Ajax, Achilles, Patroclus, peer of gods in council, and my own dear son, Antilochus. A man singularly fleet of foot, and in fight, valiant. But we suffered much more than this. What mortal tongue indeed could tell the whole story? Though you were to stay here and question me for 5 years, or even 6, I could not tell you all that the Achaeans suffered, and you would turn homeward, weary of my tale, before it even ended. 9 long years did we try every kind of stratagem, but the hand of heaven was against us. During all this time, there was no one who could compare with your father in subtlety. If indeed you are his son, I can hardly believe my eyes. And you talk just like him, too. No one would say that people of such different ages could speak so much alike. He and I never had any kind of difference from first to last, neither in camp nor council, but in singleness of heart and singleness in purpose, we advised the Argives how all might be ordered for the best. When, however, we had sacked the city of Priam and were setting sail in our ships, as heaven had dispersed us, then Zeus saw fit to vex the Argives on their homeward voyage, for they had not all been either wise or understanding, and hence many came to a bad end through the displeasure of Zeus's daughter Athene, who brought about a quarrel between the two sons of Atreus. The sons of Atreus called a meeting, which was not as it should be, for it was sunset, and the Achaeans were heavy with wine. When they explained why they had called the people together, it seemed that Menelaus was for sailing homeward at once. And this displeased Agamemnon, who thought that we should wait till we had offered hecatombs to appease the anger of Athene. Fool that he was. He might have known that he would not prevail with her. For when the gods have made up their minds, they do not change them lightly. So the two stood bandying hard words, whereon the Achaeans sprang to their feet with a cry that rent the air, and were of two minds as to what they should do. That night we rested and nursed our anger, for Zeus was hatching mischief against us. But in the morning, some of us drew our ships into the water and put our goods with our women on board, while the rest, about half in number, stayed behind with Agamemnon. We, the other half, embarked and sailed. And the ships went well, for heaven had smoothed the sea. When we reached Tenedos, we offered sacrifices to the gods, for we were longing to get home. Cruel Zeus, however, did not yet mean that we should do so, and raised a second quarrel, in the course of which some among us turned their ships back again and sailed away under Odysseus to make their peace with Agamemnon. But I and all the ships that were with me pressed forward, for I saw that mischief was brewing. The son of Tydeus went on also with me, and his crews with him. Later on, Menelaus joined us at Lesbos and found us making up our minds about our course, for we did not know whether to go outside Chios by the island of Syra, keeping this to our left, or inside Chios over against the stormy headlands of Mimas. So we asked heaven for a sign, and were shown one to the effect that we should be soonest out of danger if we headed our ships across the open sea to Euboea. This we therefore did, and a fair wind sprang up, which gave us a quick passage during the night to Gerestus, where we offered many sacrifices to Poseidon for having helped us so far on our way. 4 days later, Diomed and his men stationed their ships in Argos. But I held on for Pylos, and the wind never fell light from the day when heaven first made it fair for me. Therefore, my dear young friend, I returned without hearing anything about the others. I know neither who got home safely nor who were lost. But as in duty bound, I will give you without reserve the reports that have reached me since I've been here in my own house. They say the Myrmidons returned home safely under Achilles' son, Neoptolemus. So also did the valiant son of Poeas, Philoctetes. Idomeneus again lost no men at sea, and all his followers who escaped death in the field got home safe with him to Crete. No matter how far out of the world you live, you will have heard of Agamemnon and the bad end he came to at the hands of Aegisthus. And a fearful reckoning did Aegisthus presently pay. See, what a good thing it is for a man to leave a son behind, to do as Orestes did, who killed false Aegisthus. The murderer of his noble father. You too, then, for you are a tall, smart-looking fellow. Show your mettle and make yourself a name in story. Telemachus answered, "Nestor, son of Neleus, honor to the Achaean name. The Achaeans applaud Orestes, and his name will live through all time, for he has avenged his father nobly. Would that heaven might grant me to do like vengeance on the insolence of the wicked suitors who are ill-treating me and plotting my ruin. But the gods have no such happiness in store for me and for my father. So we must bear it as best we may. My friend," said Nestor, "now that you remind me, I remember to have heard that your mother has many suitors who are ill-disposed towards you and are making havoc of your estate. Do you submit to this tamely? Or are public feeling and the voice of heaven against you? Who knows but what Odysseus may come back after and pay these scoundrels in full, either single-handed or with a force of Achaeans behind him. If Athene were to take as great a liking to you as she did to Odysseus when we were fighting before Troy, if she would take as good care of you as she did of him, these wooers would soon, some of them, forget their wooing. Telemachus answered, I can expect nothing of the kind. It would be far too much to hope for. I dare not let myself think of it. Even though the gods themselves willed it, no such good fortune could befall me. On this, Athene said, Telemachus, what are you talking about? Heaven has a long arm if it is minded to save a man. And if it were me, I should not care how much I suffered before getting home, provided I could be safe when I was once there. I would rather this than get home quickly and then be killed in my own house as Agamemnon was by the treachery of Aegisthus and his wife. Still, death is certain. And when a man's hour is come, not even the gods can save him, no matter how fond they are of him. Mentor, answered Telemachus, do not let us talk about it anymore. There is no chance of my father's ever coming back. The gods have long since counseled his destruction. There is something else, however, about which I should like to ask Nestor, for he knows much more than anyone else does. They say he has reigned for 3 generations, so that it's like talking to an immortal. Tell me, therefore, Nestor, and tell me true. How did Agamemnon come to die in that way? What was Menelaus doing? And how came false Aegisthus to kill so far better a man than himself? Was Menelaus away from Achaean Argos, voyaging elsewhither among mankind, that Aegisthus took heart and killed Agamemnon? I will tell you truly, answered Nestor. And indeed, you have yourself divined how it all happened. Thus did he speak, and they did even as he said, and yoked the fleet horses to the chariot. The housekeeper packed them up a provision of bread, wine, and sweetmeats fit for the sons of princes. Then Telemachus got into the chariot, while Pisistratus gathered up the reins and took his seat beside him. He lashed the horses on, and they flew forward, nothing loath, into the open country, leaving the high citadel of Pylos behind them. All that day did they travel, swaying the yoke upon their necks, till the sun went down and darkness was over all the land. Then they reached Pherae, where Diocles lived, who was the son to Ortilochus and grandson to Alpheus. Here they passed the night, and Diocles entertained them hospitably. When the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, they again yoked their horses and drove out through the gateway under the echoing gatehouse. Pisistratus lashed the horses on, and they flew forward, nothing loath. Presently, they came to the corn lands of the open country, and in the course of time, they completed their journey so well did their steeds take them. Till next time, good night.